the speaking statue again, Monday the 14th. After preaching at Lurgan, I inquired of Mr. Miller whether he had any thoughts of perfecting his speaking statue, which had so long lain by. He said he had altered his design, that he intended, if he had life and health, to make two which would not only speak, but sing hymns alternately with an articulate voice, that he had made a trial, and it answered well. But he could not tell when he should finish it, as he had much business of other kinds, and could give only his leisure hours to this. How amazing is it that no man of fortune enables him to give all his time to the work. I preached in the evening at Lisburn. All the time I could spare here was taken up by poor patients. I generally asked, "What remedies have you used?" and was not a little surprised. What has fashion to do with physic? Why, in Ireland at least, almost as much with headdress? Blisters for anything or nothing were all the fashion when I was in Ireland last. Now the grand fashionable medicine for 20 diseases, who would imagine it, is mercury sublimate. Why is it not a halter or a pistol? They would cure a little more speedily. Tuesday the 15th, when I came to Belfast, I learned the real cause of the late insurrections in this neighborhood. Lord Donegal, the proprietor of almost the whole country, came hither to give his tenants new leases. But when they came, they found two merchants of the town had taken their farms over their heads. Multitudes of them, with their wives and children, were turned out to the wide world. It is no wonder that, as their lives were now bitter to them, they should fly out as they did. It is rather a wonder that they did not go much farther. And if they had, who would have been most in fault? Those who were without home, without money, without food for themselves and families, or those who drove them to this extremity. The earthquake at Natalie. Monday, July 5th, about 11 we crossed Dublin Bar and were at Hoy Lake the next afternoon. This was the first night I ever lay awake in my life, though I was at ease in body and mind. I believe few can say this. In 17 years I never lost one night's sleep. I went by moderate stages from Liverpool to Natalie, where I arrived on Friday the 9th. The next morning we went to see the effects of the late earthquake. Such it undoubtedly was. On Monday the 27th at 4 in the morning, a rumbling noise was heard, accompanied with sudden gusts of wind and wavings of the ground. Presently the earthquake followed, which shook only the farmer's house and removed it entire about a yard, but carried the barn about 15 yards and then swallowed it up in a vast chasm. It tore the ground into numberless chasms, large and small. In the large, threw up mounts 15 or 20 feet high. It carried a hedge with two oaks above 40 feet and left them in their natural position. It then moved under the bed of the river, which, making more resistance, received a ruder shock, being shattered in pieces, and heaved up about 30 feet from its foundations. By throwing this and many oaks into its channel, the Severn was quite stopped up and constrained to flow backward, till with incredible fury it wrought itself a new channel. Such a scene of desolation I never saw. Will none tremble when God thus terribly shakes the earth? Monday, August 16th. In the evening I preached at St. Austell. Wednesday the 17th in the Coinage Hall at Truro. At 6 in the Main Street at Helstone. How changed is this town since a Methodist preacher could not ride through it without hazard of his life. Nana 70 preaches to 30,000 people. Saturday the 21st, I preached in Illogan and at Redruff. Sunday the 22nd in St. Agnes Churchtown. At 8, about 1 at Redruff, and 5 in the amphitheater at Gwinnett. The people both filled it and covered the ground round about it to a considerable distance. Supposing the space to be 4 yards square and to contain 5 persons in a square yard, there must be above 2,000 people, the largest assembly I ever preached to. Yet I found, upon inquiry, all could hear, even to the skirts of the congregation. perhaps the first time that a man of 70 had been heard by 30,000 persons at once. Monday, September 13th, my cold remaining, I was ill able to speak. In the evening, I was much worse, my palate and throat being greatly inflamed. However, I preached as I could, but I could then go no farther. I could swallow neither liquids nor solids, and the windpipe seemed nearly closed. I lay down at my usual time, but the defluxion of bream was so uninterrupted that I slept not a minute till nearly 3 in the morning. On the following 9 days, I grew better. Sunday the 19th, I thought myself able to speak to the congregation, which I did for half an hour. But afterwards I found a pain in my left side and in my shoulder by turns, exactly as I did at Canterbury 20 years before. In the morning I could scarcely lift my hand to my head, but after being electrified I was much better, so that I preached with tolerable ease in the evening, and the next evening read the letters, though my voice was weak. From this time I slowly recovered my voice and my strength, and on Sunday preached without any trouble. Monday, October 4, I went to Shepton Mallet, to Shaftesbury, and on Tuesday to Salisbury. Wednesday the 6th, taking chaise at 2 in the morning, in the evening I came well to London. The rest of the week I made what inquiry I could into the state of my accounts. Some confusion had arisen from the sudden death of my bookkeeper, but it was less than might have been expected. A monster elm. Monday the 11th and the following days I took a little tour through Bedfordshire and Northamptonshire. Between Northampton and Towcester we met with a great natural curiosity, the largest elm I ever saw. It was 28 feet in circumference, 6 feet more than that which was some years ago in Magdalen College walks at Oxford. Chapter 17, Wesley arrested, a terrible ride, a Methodist Isaac Newton, Wesley in the American War. 1774, Monday, January 24th. I was desired by Mrs. Wright of New York to let her take my effigy in waxwork. She has that of Mr. Whitfield and many others, but none of them, I think, comes up to a well-drawn picture. Friday, May 20th, I rode over to Mr. Fraser's at Monody, whose mother-in-law was to be buried that day. Oh, what a difference is there between the English and the Scotch method of burial. The English does honor to human nature and even to the poor remains that were once a temple of the Holy Ghost. But when I see in Scotland a coffin put into the earth and covered up without a word spoken, it reminds me of what was spoken concerning Jehoiakim. He shall be buried with the burial of an ass. Wesley arrested in Edinburgh. Wednesday, June 1st, I went to Edinburgh, and the next day examined the society one by one. I was agreeably surprised. They had fairly profited since I was here last. Such a number of persons having sound Christian experience I never found in this society before. I preached in the evening to a very elegant congregation, and yet with great enlargement of heart. Saturday the 4th, I found uncommon liberty at Edinburgh in applying Ezekiel's vision of the dry bones. As I was walking home, two men followed me, one of whom said, "Sir, you are my prisoner. I have a warrant from the sheriff to carry you to the toll booth." At first I thought he jested, but finding the thing was serious, I desired one or two of our friends to go up with me. When we were safe lodged in a house adjoining to the toll booth, I desired the officer to let me see his warrant. I found the prosecutor was one George Sutherland, once a member of the society. He had deposed that Hugh Saunderson, one of John Wesley's preachers, had taken from his wife £100 in money and upwards of £30 in goods, and had, besides that, terrified her into madness, so that, through the want of her help and the loss of his business, he was damaged £500. Before the sheriff, Archibald Cockburn, Esquire, he had deposed that the said John Wesley and Hugh Saunderson, to evade her pursuit, were preparing to fly the country, and therefore he desired his warrant to search for, seize, and incarcerate them in the toll booth till they should find security for their appearance. To this request, the sheriff had assented and given his warrant for that purpose. But why does he incarcerate John Wesley? Nothing is laid against him, less or more. Hugh Saunderson preaches in connection with him. What then? Was not the sheriff strangely overseen? Mr. Sutherland furiously insisted that the officer should carry us to the toll booth without delay. However, he waited till two or three of our friends came and gave a bond for our appearance on the 24th instance. Mr. S. did appear, the cause was heard, and the prosecutor fined £1,000. Wesley's terrible ride. Sunday the 5th, about 8 I preached at Ormiston, 12 miles from Edinburgh. The house being small, I stood in the street and proclaimed the grace of our Lord Jesus Christ. The congregation behaved with the utmost decency. So did that on the Castle Hill in Edinburgh at noon, though I strongly insisted that God now commandeth all men everywhere to repent. Acts 17:30. In the evening the house was thoroughly filled, and many seemed deeply affected. I do not wonder that Satan, had it been in his power, would have had me otherwise employed this day. Monday the 20th, about 9 I set out from Sunderland for Horsley with Mr. Hopper and Mr. Smith. I took Mrs. Smith and her two little girls in the chaise with me. About 2 miles from the town, just on the brow of the hill, on a sudden, both the horses set out without any visible cause and flew down the hill like an arrow out of a bow. In a minute, John fell off the coach box. The horses then went on full speed, sometimes to the edge of a ditch on the right, sometimes on the left. A cart came up against them. They avoided it as exactly as if the man had been on the box. A narrow bridge was at the foot of the hill. They went directly over the middle of it. They ran up the next hill with the same speed, many persons meeting us but getting out of the way. Near the top of the hill was a gate which led into a farmer's yard. It stood open. They turned short and ran through it without touching the gate on one side or the post on the other. I thought, however, the gate which is on the other side of the yard is shut and will stop them. But they rushed through it as if it had been a cobweb and galloped on through the cornfield. The little girls cried out, "Grandpapa, save us." I told them, "Nothing will hurt you. Do not be afraid." Feeling no more fear or care, blessed be God, than if I had been sitting in my study. The horses ran on till they came to the edge of a steep precipice. Just then, Mr. Smith, who could not overtake us before, galloped in between. They stopped in a moment. Had they gone on ever so little, he and we must have gone down together. I am persuaded both evil and good angels had a large share in this transaction. How large we do not know, but we shall know hereafter. Tuesday the 28th. This being my birthday, the first day of my 72nd year, I was considering how is it that I find just the same strength as I did 30 years ago, that my sight is considerably better now and my nerves firmer than they were then, that I have none of the infirmities of old age and have lost several I had in my youth. The grand cause is the good pleasure of God, who doeth whatsoever pleaseth him. The chief means are, 1, my constantly rising at 4 for about 50 years, 2, my generally preaching at 5 in the morning, one of the most healthy exercises in the world, 3, my never traveling less by sea or land than 4,500 miles in a year. A collier's remarkable escape. Saturday, July 30th. I went to Natalie and in the evening preached under a sycamore tree in Natalie Wood to a large congregation, a good part of them colliers who drank in every word. Surely never were places more alike than Natalie Wood, Gateshead Fell, and Kingswood. Sunday the 31st, the church could not contain the congregations either morning or afternoon, but in the evening I preached to a still larger congregation at Brosley, equally attentive. I now learned the particulars of a remarkable story which I had heard imperfectly before. Sometime since, one of the colliers here, coming home at night, dropped into a coal pit 24 yards deep. He called aloud for help, but none heard all that night and all the following day. The second night, being weak and faint, he fell asleep, and dreamed that his wife, who had been sometime dead, came to him and greatly comforted him. In the morning, a gentleman going a-hunting, a hare started up just before the hounds, ran straight to the mouth of the pit, and was gone. No man could tell how. The hunter searched all around the pit till they heard a voice from the bottom. They quickly procured proper help and drew up the man unhurt. Tuesday, August 2nd. I preached at 10 in the town hall at Evesham and rode on to Broadmarston. Thursday the 4th, I crossed over to Tewkesbury and preached at noon in a meadow near the town under a tall oak. I went thence to Cheltenham. As it was the high season for drinking the waters, the town was full of gentry. So I preached near the marketplace in the evening to the largest congregation there was ever seen there. Some of the footmen at first made a little disturbance, but I turned to them and they stood reproved. Saturday the 6th, I walked from Newport to Berkeley Castle. It is a beautiful though very ancient building and every part of it kept in good repair, except the lumber room and the chapel, the latter of which, having been of no use for many years, is now dirty enough. I particularly admired the fine situation in the garden on the top of the house. In one corner of the castle is the room where poor Richard II was murdered. His effigy is still preserved, said to be taken before his death. If he was like this, he had an open, manly countenance, though with a cast of melancholy. In the afternoon, we went on to Bristol. Wesley at Corfe Castle. Monday, October 10, I preached at Salisbury, and on Tuesday the 11th set out for the Isle of Purbeck. When we came to Corfe Castle, the evening being quite calm and mild, I preached in the meadow near the town to a deeply attentive congregation, gathered from all parts of the island. Wednesday the 12th, I preached to a large congregation at 5, who seemed quite athirst for instruction. Afterward, we took a walk over the remains of the castle, so bravely defended in the last century, against all the power of the Parliament forces, by the widow of the Lord Chief Justice Banks. It is one of the noblest ruins I ever saw. The walls are of an immense thickness, defying even the assaults of time, and were formerly surrounded by a deep ditch. The house which stands in the middle on the very top of the rock has been a magnificent structure. Sometime since the proprietor fitted up some rooms on the southwest side of this and laid out a little garden commanding a large prospect, pleasant beyond description. For a while he was greatly delighted with it, but the eye was not satisfied with seeing. It grew familiar. It pleased no more and is now run all to ruin. No wonder. What can be light always but the knowledge and love of God? A Methodist, Isaac Newton. Monday the 31st, and the following days I visited the societies near London. Friday, November 4th, in the afternoon, John Dowes, who had preached with us many years, was saying, I feel such a love to the people at West Street that I could be content to die with them. I do not find myself very well, but I must be with them this evening. He went thither and began preaching on, Come unto me, ye that are weary and heavy laden. After speaking 10 or 12 minutes, he sank down and spake no more, till his spirit returned to God. I suppose he was by nature fully as great a genius as Sir Isaac Newton. I will mention but 2 or 3 instances of it. When he was at school learning algebra, he came one day to his master and said, Sir, I can prove this proposition a better way than it is proved in the book. His master thought it could not be, but upon trial acknowledged it to be so. Sometime after, his father sent him to Newcastle with a clock which was to be mended. He observed the clock.